I guess we're just going to hear Scarlett's heavy breathing for like
probably
30 seconds.
Hello again.
Welcome to Cocktails and Killers Season 2, Episode 2.
Yay, finally.
It's been a long time. No, we aren't dead. No one murdered us. So, we're alive. Been busy.
Busy. Tired.
Amen on the tired. Shit.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I got a good one today.
Who are we talking about?
We're talking about the Lululemon killings.
Lululemon
killing. Yes.
I've never heard of this.
You haven't heard about this one?
No, okay. I mean, I've heard like there was a documentary recently on Lululemon or something that came out.
I don't think I've watched this. I originally saw this on one of those older like Paula Zahn like.
Oh, things. Yeah.
So that's kind of when I was like, oh, this is very interesting. So, because obviously I've had this ready for months now, but we just haven't been able to have time to do it. So.
Yeah.
So, yes. Okay. Let's set the stage. Okay. It's 2011 in Bethesda, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, quiet, upscale, nice little town.
Yeah.
You know. So, Rachel Oratelli, she's the manager of the local Lululemon store. So, she goes in. It's 8 a.m. morning shift. She's opening. She walks up, goes to unlock the door, and notices that it's already unlocked. So, she's like, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
So, she goes on into the store and she notices that there's a disarray. A mannequin's on the floor. A clothing rail had been knocked over. Clothes were kind of scattered all over.
Mm-hmm. Looks like maybe a possible robbery or something. Yeah. Break in.
Because at first she thought, well, maybe the cleaning people had left it open. But then when she saw that, she was like, okay, something's up here.
Yeah.
So, you know, she gets worried. She just runs out of the store, takes her phone, and calls the police. So right next door to the Lululemon store was an Apple store. And this was when they were launching the iPad 2. So there was a long line of people out there waiting. So one of the men in line noticed Rachel come out and that she seemed panicked. So he asked her, you know, what's going on? And she tells him, and she asked him, how long have you been here? Have you seen anyone come in or out?
Mm-hmm.
And he had been there about an hour. And he said, no, he hadn't seen anything. Nothing was, you know, off to him. So he actually offered to walk in with her, go back in the store to kind of, you know, try to look. Because they didn't make it out of the front room to try to look around and see if there was anything else going on. He goes on with her. And as they go more towards the back, they notice things are just even worse back there. They were able to see behind the registers and they saw that everything out of the cash register had been opened and emptied.
Oh.
That was all gone. The safe was open and also emptied.
Dang.
So they're like, okay, this is definitely a robbery. So they go on back a little bit. There's the way it looks, there's two back rooms. So they go into the very first back room, and there's glass all over, there's clothes all over the floor, and they notice some blood.
Oh.
But a lot of blood.
A lot?
A lot. Yeah. They described it looked like a trail where maybe someone had been dragged.
Oh, so it was like a...
Yeah. And you can go back, if you all want to, you can get online and there's lots of crime scene
photos
and stuff. Yeah, it's really gruesome. So, they also noticed that there were two sets of bloody footprints. One of them looked quite large, they thought probably a man. And then one of them was much smaller. Could have been a woman, but... Small man, you know.
Yeah.
So on the wall beside of where they were, they noticed hand marks of blood smeared all over the walls too, not just on the floor.
Wow, this was like a fight took place or something.
Wait until you hear it's freaking crazy. So they both leave. They're like, okay, so go back outside. And now she's trying to call the police again, like, please hurry, you know, you need to get here. She stays out front, and Ryan, that's the guy's name, he decides that he was going to go back in to make sure there's nobody in there, you know, mm-hmm. that they're gone. So he goes in, and this time he goes into the very back room. And that's where he found a woman laying face down in a pool of blood, and she had a rope tied around her neck.
Oh.
Yeah. So he's like, oh shit. You know, he gets flustered and panicked, and he starts to run back out of the store at this point. He hears noises coming from another, little side, bathroom off of back there. Obviously, he was very apprehensive, but he goes into it was an employee restroom was what it was, and he found another body of a woman. She was on her back, and she was bound with zip ties, and she was covered in blood. But she was still breathing. That's what he heard, yeah. He's like, okay, so he runs out, tells Rachel, hey, look, this is what's happening, and she realizes who it is. So Brittany Norwood and Jana Murray, they were the two closing employees the night before. Mm-hmm. Yep. The woman who was still breathing was Brittany Norwood. She was 28. So, like I said, she was found zip-tied with her hands above her head. She had several cuts to her body, arms, legs, some along her torso, and she had a big, deep gash on her forehead. Her leggings were the crotch had been ripped, so possibly
sexual assault.
Yeah. And so the woman in the back who was dead was Jana Murray. So authorities, when they finally got there, you know, they reviewed the scene. Rachel and Ryan told them everything, you know, that had transpired, what they'd found and all that. They found a bloody hanger, a bloody coat rack, an open toolbox with tools that were missing that they found scattered about that were covered in blood, like a hammer, a wrench. As they continued the investigation, you know, they sent Jana's body for an autopsy. And when it came back, she had been stabbed at least 330 times.
What?
That was just the wounds that they could count as one actual wound. There were so many that it could have been... Because the way
more
they,
than one, but they were so close together, it looked like one. Oh, my.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, that's not random.
No.
That's personal.
Personal. Mm-hmm. They said it was a brutal and slow attack. So the Montgomery County State Attorney, his name was John McCarthy, he was the one that was kind of talking about all this. And he said that the equivalent to an injury inflicted on you would be every 3 seconds for 16 minutes straight. That was how long the attack lasted on her.
That's insane.
Of the 330, she had 200 just to her face, head, and neck, and 130 in the chest, arms, and torso area.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. The coroner report, you know, self-defense wounds to her hands and arms. She had 13 skull fractures alongside other bruising to her body. Jeez. Her skull was so badly damaged, a portion of it, had collapsed in. And the coroner, he said that he probably believed that she was alive for most of the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
What actually ended up finally killing her was a blow to the back of her head that was so severe that her skull detached from her spinal cord. It severed her spinal cord.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So she was, completely brutalized.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so let's go back to Brittany.
Yeah.
You know, she was found in the bathroom, not that bad.
Mm-hmm.
So after they find her, they rush her to the hospital. And her injuries, honestly, weren't that bad. They said most of them were superficial. She needed a couple stitches.
She wasn't the target then.
And she had a rape kit performed on her.
The main target, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Well, and police, you know, believe because that her injuries weren't as bad that she wasn't the intended target either. Finally, you know, they were able to go in and talk to Brittany. And she recalled, you know, that it was a normal closing shift. She and Jana closed the store after the last customer left, counted the cash and all that, finished cleaning up, and Jana locked up the front doors. She says she recounts Jana getting in her car and driving off while she started walking to the subway station to head home. She says she got all the way to the station and realized she had forgotten her pass to get onto the subway.
Mm-hmm.
And so she needed to go back and pick it up. So now Jana had been employed here for a while, and Brittany was kind of a new hire. She'd only been there for about 6 weeks or so. So she had to call Jana to come back, meet her, so that she could get in the store.
Gotcha.
And she's like, okay, that's fine, because she had actually forgotten her laptop.
Oh.
So she needed to go back anyway, so she wasn't, you know, bothered by it. So Brittany says she walked back and waited for Jana in front of the store. She gets there, unlocked the door, and they close it, but they don't lock it back because they're just going in and out.
Yeah.
They both go to the back room to get their stuff. And according to Brittany, her Metro Pass wasn't there where she had thought that it was, and she couldn't find it. So she has Jana, and they're both kind of, you know, searching, looking around for it. And as they were looking around for it, they walked to the front of the store, and they noticed that the doors were open after they had closed them.
Oh.
Yeah, they didn't lock them, you know, they just shut them
right
behind them, and they noticed that they were open. Immediately, Brittany says that they're just ambushed by two men wearing ski masks. She recalls the night, you know, as here's what she said. One man was about 6 foot, grabs Jana, hits her in the head, and knocks her to the floor. While the other man, who was about 5'5", grabbed Brittany and started dragging her to the back room by her hair. Brittany states that this was the last she saw of Jana for a while, as they separated both girls during the attack. She then claims the smaller man dragged her to the registers and demanded she put all the money into his backpack, and after she did what she was told, he dragged her into one of the back rooms of the store. He then proceeded to zip tie her and, quote, torture her. He was careful not to inflict any injuries that could potentially kill her, but more so put her in much pain, and she begged him to stop, which explained why her injuries were so superficial, she says.
Yeah.
She said the man threatened to slit her throat, ripped a portion of her leggings off, raped her, and left her on the floor after he was done. She said a few moments later that the other man came back in with a wooden store hanger and sexually assaulted her with it.
Oh my God.
She says that during this time when all this is going on, that she can hear Jana screaming and yelling for help from the other room. And she said as the time went on, the screams, you know, got less and weren't as loud until finally it was quiet. Brittany says that one of the attackers picked her up and took her to the other room where Jana was, and they threw her on top of Jana's body, she says, to make some sort of statement, as if they're telling me, you're lucky this isn't you. She says the men laughed and told her they were going to spare her life simply because, quote, she was more fun to fuck.
What the hell?
So they grabbed her off of Jana's body, and that's when they threw her into the bathroom where she was found.
They're not too damn smart.
And left her in there. She, you know, gave a very convincing testimony to them as she was visibly distraught. You know, she blamed herself for the attack because she had to go back because she forgot the pass.
Mm-hmm.
She even asked how Jana was doing, acting, you know, like that she didn't know for sure if she was dead or whatever. After this happens, the police is like, okay, we need to go look at the footage from the
security cameras
and everything. The bad thing is no one had any security cameras except the Apple store.
Even that store didn't have any cameras in
no.
it.
No.
Dang. I mean, I know. Lululemon ain't cheap.
Like, no, it's not. And, I mean, maybe because it's such an upscale neighborhood and, you know, Bethesda, but you would think.
You would still think that they would have cameras even in the store. What year was this again?
2011.
Yeah, that's.
So
crazy.
They got the footage from the Apple store, and they found two white males dressed in all black with black beanies walking by the store around the time that Brittany says they were ambushed. Doesn't show them going in or anything, but the view wasn't super great,
mm-hmm.
so they couldn't really tell a whole lot. But they blasted out all over the news, you know, the footage, this is who we're looking for and everything.
Yeah.
So now police are like, all right, let's go back. We need to talk to Rachel again. That was the store manager who found all this. So in her interview, she told investigators that she was on the phone with Jana that night as she was driving home right before she had went back to meet Brittany to let her in, and that was around 10 o'clock. The police go back, and they're able to pull they didn't have cameras, but they could see when they turned on the alarm and, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
So the alarm was first set on at 9:45 when they left the store. which would make sense because Jaina was talking to Rachel around 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then it shows that it was disarmed again at 10:05, which would have been when they went back to get their belongings. As they continue the investigation, the investigators realize that according to Brittany's recollection of the night, Jaina had parked her car in front of the store. But Jaina's car wasn't there.
Oh, when Rachel got there the next morning and...
Right. Mm-hmm. And when the police got there, the car wasn't there. So they're thinking, okay, well, maybe the robber stole her car, mm-hmm. too, you know, and to get away from the scene. The officers were given a description of her car, and it was noted that she did have Texas plates, which would kind of help it stand out, you know.
Yeah.
Being in Maryland, it would be easy to spot. So Jaina's car had actually been spotted after this by a patrol officer. It was parked a few blocks away from Lululemon. And he found it that night around midnight, but didn't know anything about it. He made note of it,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't, you know, discover all this until later when we knew that they were looking for it. So the officer recalled that the car was parked with the lights on and there was a passenger inside. 2 hours later, around 2 a.m., the officer drove past her parked car in the same location, but this time the lights were off and nobody was in it. With this information, the investigating officers drove to the location her car was last seen, and it was still there. So they were able to impound it for evidence.
Hmm.
They searched the car for prints, DNA samples, you know, basically anything forensically that they could use to help identify or, you know, do tests with.
Yeah.
While they waited for the results from that to come back, they went back to the only real evidence, which was the video from the Apple store.
Mm-hmm. So I know Brittany got raped, and mm-hmm. they probably did a rape kit and stuff, but did they leave DNA behind?
You'll find out.
Oh, okay.
Just wait. You're going to be like, what the hell? Trust me, my mouth was to the floor whenever I watched this the first time.
So they went back and to the Apple store footage.
Yeah, they were going back to look at that. So the detective assigned to the case was Dimitri Ruvine. He decided that he was going to, you know, do a stakeout in front of the store, hoping that maybe the attackers would go back for, you know, because sometimes people go back to the crime scene because they're fucking crazy.
Well, that's true.
You know, so he sat, you know, there and was people watching for days. And he did see two men that fit the description that Brittany gave to him,
mm-hmm.
you know. And he stops them, shows them the images on the security footage, and was like, do you know these guys? And they said, yeah, that's us.
Yeah, that's us.
Cool. So they actually worked as waiters at a restaurant a few doors on down from Lululemon. And they walked together, you know, pretty much after every shift. Because they both were going the same way. That explains why they were wearing all black. That was their uniform.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the detective was able to verify their alibis that they were at work the whole time. And, you know, like I said, the video didn't show them going in. It just showed them walking by.
Yeah.
Okay. That evidence was pretty much...
kind of a dead end.
Dead end. He's like, okay, this is a dead end. And he's like, and this just, nothing's like adding up to him.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, this is just weird. Like, I don't even know what direction to go in now because nothing makes sense at all.
Yeah. Which, I mean, given how brutally the one girl was attacked... had to be somebody that knew her. I wonder if it was like an ex-boyfriend or, you know.
Well, and so that's kind of what got him thinking is, okay, Jaina was just completely tortured.
That's beyond belief.
And Brittany really wasn't. He was like, that just didn't sit right with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, something about that just isn't adding up. You know, he was thinking back to the interview with Brittany and everything. And she had said that the men had... use racial slurs toward her at points, and you know, he's like, well, if they hated her so much, why wasn't she also
killed
and beaten like that? He was like, he just kept saying, like, this just doesn't make sense. He's like, all right, we got to start over from the beginning. You know, like,
right,
we just got to go back to the beginning and forget everything we think we know, and let's look at the crime scene and the evidence that we have. So he's like, this is going to be a very unpopular opinion, and he thought no one would believe him, but he's thinking that Brittany may have something to do with it.
Really? Well, I mean, well, see, okay, because when you said that they weren't going to kill her because, what did they say, because she was good to fuck?
Yeah.
I was like, they're really stupid. Because you don't leave a witness when you're going to commit a murder.
Right.
She was barely... Oh.
So he's like, that was his suspicion. And he's like...
That would make sense.
No one's going to believe me, but...
That would make sense as to why everything was so superficial on her. Mm-hmm.
He's like, but I've got to get the evidence to be able to back this up and see if this is, like, legit. But, like, he's like, I just know. He's like, in my gut, this is...
Something right.
Something, yeah. Now, he's like, okay, targeting Brittany. He's like, that is who I think the suspect is. So, this is, you know, we're going to treat it as that. And this, we're going to try to find the evidence, you know.
Yeah.
So, she's the main suspect now. They go back through the evidence, and the detective pointed out that, you know, the robbers, they didn't bring any of their own weapons. They didn't bring guns or knives or anything.
They used probably the tools.
Everything that they used was found in the store.
Yeah.
Everything. The zip ties were actually, they found out, also already in the store. It's the ones that they used for the clothes, like for merchandising and adding, you know, mm-hmm. tags and whatever on. So they didn't even bring those. What
what kind of a robber or like a who doesn't bring anything?
Right? What really started to raise eyebrows for the other detectives too was the robbers wouldn't have had any way to break into the store. They had no way of knowing that the girls would be there with mm-hmm. the doors open. So who just shows up unarmed with nothing to break into a store?
Yeah.
What are you going to bust the glass with? How are you know, like,
uh-huh.
there's nothing that would show that they actually were planning on robbing mm-hmm. the store. So going back and looking at the wound patterns, the detectives were like, there's so many different kinds and vary and so many different weapons. Like, the assailants would have had to leave the girls alone at certain times to be able to go and get all these different things,
mm-hmm.
you know, to stab them with or hit them with, you know, a rock, a hammer, a wrench, the coat hanger, you know, all the other tools out of the toolbox. Like, it just didn't, you know, make sense that they would do that.
Yeah.
Because they would be alone for long periods of time, you know, and
yeah.
possibly could have to escape
or get to a phone and call 911 or
right.
anything.
Adding to that, they noticed the inconsistency in the bloody footprints. Because it's all over the store, you know, and mm-hmm. all the rooms and everything. But there's none outside of the store, front or back. So they're like, They're like, that's weird.
Now I'm thinking there was only one guy.
So they go back to the store because they're like, there's no prints, you know, outside anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Could they have left their shoes there? And they just hadn't found them yet. So they go back to the store, and in a shelf, they find a man's size 14 Reebok sneaker covered in blood on the bottom. And while they were doing this, they call Rachel and, you know, telling her and about, you know, mention the items and everything that they found in the store that they were thinking was clues. And Rachel said, don't worry about those shoes. She was like, because those actually belong to the store as well. So they kept these shoes there for customers who wanted to try on, like, their clothes or whatever, and they might not have, like, let's say you go to Lululemon and you're wearing, like, boots, you know. They mm-hmm. want to try their stuff on, but they want to see what it looks like with tennis shoes. So they would keep random tennis shoes there for guests to try on with their clothes to see how they're, you know, bougie people.
Do they make Lululemon for men?
Yes.
Oh, okay, so they would keep men's shoes there,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, they do.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So then they're like, okay, well, obviously, whoever did this put the shoes on and, you know, was wearing them around, knew they were there.
That they were there.
Right, and knew to put them back, you know, and wore them around during the attack because they didn't want to get their own shoes bloody. Also, the layout of the blood and just, it didn't add up. As the larger prints were layered over the smaller footprints, as if they were purposely, like,
trying to
cover them up. Yes.
Those were Brittany's prints.
Like we said, you know, the attack on Jaina seemed personal.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, she was the main target. So, you know, was, like, couldn't just happen that Brittany was there at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody knew they were going back or whatever.
Right. I smell a setup.
So, at this point, he's like, I need to learn more about Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, I mean, she came up from a, you know, good upbringing. She played soccer. She was from Washington and then moved Maryland later on. All right, so at this point, they decide that they need to get to know a little bit more about Brittany and her background.
Mm-hmm.
So she came, you know, from a good upbringing. She was a really, really good soccer player. She played defender. She actually went on to play in college at Stony Brook University in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the defensive most valuable player one season.
Hmm.
So they start talking to some of her teammates, and they remember Brittany. You know, she was a good athlete, but she was known to be a liar and a thief as well.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. You know, other girls on the team that had known her long enough, they told investigators that every time she was around, things would mysteriously go missing. And they would finally got to the point where they were like, you know, telling everybody, watch your locker, watch your stuff while she's around. And eventually, like, the accusations, she got kicked off the team because of it. And they said that the suspicions of her being a thief didn't end, you know, in college. Somehow they were able to talk to an old hairstylist of Brittany's, and they mm-hmm. claimed that she failed to pay for her weave several times. They talked to some of her former roommates, and they also basically said the same things about her. She was known to be a pathological liar, and that she would just take things if she wanted them. They found out, you know, she lied to people about graduating from college because she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just like all... literally the definition of a pathological liar. Mm-hmm. She lied about everything to everyone. They also discovered that when she was in her 20s, she and an old boyfriend had broken up, and she just wasn't able to cope with that. So she's texting him, harassing him and his new girlfriend. And at one point, she broke into their house and stole a bunch of electronics and other stuff from her ex-boyfriend and his new girlfriend. So he actually filed a restraining order on Brittany. And she violated it multiple times and continued to stalk him, they said, for months. Probably the most interesting thing that they found out when, you know, trying to research Brittany and everything. The store manager, Rachel, she mentioned to police that Jaina and Brittany actually didn't really get along that great.
Oh.
Jaina suspected Brittany of stealing from the store and from coworkers in the store. And then that caused a meeting, you know, between the managers and the key holders to talk about the accusations against Brittany. They decided, you know, in agreement that whoever found her stealing, if they caught her again, would report it immediately and she would be fired.
So she was looking at losing her job
mm-hmm.
pretty soon.
Yes. Because, you know, she's not going to stop. She's been doing this
of course
forever.
Not. She's obviously, like you said, a pathological liar and a klepto, apparently.
Yes. At this point, the forensic testing on Jaina's car is finally done. The analysis concluded a lot of Jaina's and Brittany's blood was in the car. So that on its own wasn't suspicious, as right. they anticipated if, let's say, two people did actually break in and steal a car. That would be normal if they stole it, you know. So, yeah. But what did give them a red flag that Brittany was undoubtedly involved was a baseball cap with blood in it. The blood was found on the inside of the cap in the center of the sweatband area, which is also the area Brittany had received her gash during the attack. The blood was Brittany's, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, okay, we need to bring Brittany back in now and talk to her again and see if she changes her story or anything. They invite Brittany back down to the station, and they ask her, where was Jaina's car parked when you came back to the store?
Yeah.
So Brittany said again that it was parked in front of the store as they were just planning to run in and out. But police knew this wasn't the case because of the baseball cap. So they asked Brittany about the zip ties that were used to tie her wrist and her ankles. Where did they come from? Brittany said that they came from one of the men's backpacks, which police knew was a lie. Because they found the exact same ones belonged to the store.
Yeah.
So not only that, but if you tie your own wrists together, you can't use your hands to tighten the zip tie. You need to use your teeth. So detectives found teeth marks on the zip ties that they'd cut from Brittany's wrist. She then expressed that she was still just in shock and everything was a blur, and that she just, you know, was having a hard time remembering now and she wanted to go home.
Oh, of course.
So
she knows her story's falling apart.
They're like, well, we let her go. We can't have, don't really have anything concrete to hold her yeah. on yet. They finally get the results back from Brittany's rape kit, too.
Uh-huh.
Shocker. No male DNA was found. No signs of forced penetration either. So.
All right, now I'm thinking there were no men.
Obviously, she lied about being raped, too. Mm-hmm. At this point, the detective was like, all right, she did this. She did it.
She did it by herself.
By herself. He was like, there weren't any men, you know, because at this point, they were still believing possibly, you know, could have been, maybe she had help or whatever. But they're like, at this point, no, this is all.
And that, because it would make sense to why she would be covered in Jana's blood, because she said that they threw her on top of the body.
Right.
I was like, that's weird.
Mm-hmm. They, again, like, ask Brittany, you want to come back for more questioning? You know, it's been a little bit more time or whatever. And, you know, she agrees to go down, probably thinking that she's never going to get caught because she's been lying forever and just fucking insane. Okay, so she goes back again. This is like the third time that she's been, at least, and, you know, they've been in the hospital and she's been to the station a couple times. So she goes back to the station for more questioning. And now she starts, like, adding things that she remembers. Remember last time she couldn't remember a lot and she wanted to go home. Well, now she remembers more things. And she says that the murderers made her go through Jana's belongings and find the keys to the car and made her drive the car away to park it nearby. Like, well, that's a pretty big thing.
Then how the hell did you end up back in the bathroom?
She wanted the police to believe that they forced her to drive the car 3 blocks, see the police car drive by, not wait for help, and then voluntarily walk back to the store where the murderers waited for her. The detective's like, okay, at this point, like, she's literally full of shit.
Exactly.
So this is when they confront her and they're like, look, we don't believe anything you're saying.
We know you did this.
You know, it does not lie. Right.
Right.
And she's just like, breaks down crying. I've told you everything I know.
Uh-huh.
You know, and the officers try to explain to her that, you know, the evidence doesn't lie. They tell her all of her inconsistencies in the story, every hole in her story. And they even, like, go into detail about the forensic evidence, how it points to her.
Yeah.
And she just cries and says, can I go home now?
She's insane. She's fucking crazy.
The officers are like, we're going to step out for a moment. You wait in here, you know?
Yeah.
And they had already, at this point, called her brother and her sister to come down there to the station. When they go back in, they let her brother and her sister go in there with her. And they had hoped that by the family members coming in, maybe she would have a change of heart and actually...
It would break her.
And yeah, and that she would confess. Admit and confess to what she had done. But she had, I mean, no remorse at all. They ask her, like, Brittany, did you do this? Like, you need to tell us so, you know, we can get this figured out. Like, come clean. And she said, I don't want to talk about it. And that was it. Nothing more, nothing less.
That's insane.
So, on March 18th, 2011, she was arrested for murder. The police, because she still, to this day, hasn't ever admitted or said anything about it.
So, like, even now, 10 years later to 11 years later.
The last thing that I read, she says she still is not ever
admitted to it, and she hasn't talked about why.
Nope. But the police have their own, you know, scenario. They think that, you know, Brittany snapped because Jana caught her stealing again.
That's a good possibility.
And they think that Brittany called Jana and lured her back there, you know, on purpose. And probably got into an argument.
She killed
that's
her.
That's when she lost her shit. Yeah.
Like that, that's a lot of crazy to stab her as much as she did and to use as many different weapons as she did.
And it all makes sense.
Straight up fucking crazy.
Now that you know what it was her, the shoes. Because she knew it had someone that knew that it was there. Everything came from inside the store. A robber wouldn't have known that they were both going to be there because it was after hours. They literally brought nothing. The only people on the footage from the Apple store were the two people who
said... The waiters.
Yeah, the waiters. There was no evidence outside. It all pointed to her. January 18, 2012 is when her trial finally started. Her defense attorney basically... opening statement said that there's no doubt about it, she did lose control.
Well, yeah, that's an understatement.
The defense hoped the jurors would conclude that things started just as like an argument, you know, and that Brittany didn't intend to murder her.
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, she lured her back there. And you know?
Like, over 300 that they could count, like, she intended to do it.
Well, and so he's basically just arguing this because in Maryland, like, for the difference of premeditated murder or not, the charges are, like murder half one. The time. Yeah, so he's just trying to get her the least amount.
Right. He's, you know, like a manslaughter charge or something. Like, it wasn't planned.
Right.
Or second degree.
With one, you know, she, I guess first degree murder, she would be given life with no chance of parole. But now if he can convince people that it was an accident and wasn't planned, second degree murder in Maryland, she could get, you know, the maximum would be 30 years with a chance of release after 15.
No
Isn't
way.
Isn't that crazy? After all that she done?
And it's just so funny because some of these people can get arrested on a drug charge, you know, marijuana, and they're fucking put away for 50 years or more, or sometimes
life. I know.
Life.
That's fucked up, isn't it? Well, the trial, it only lasted 6 days, and the jury deliberated, and they come back and found her guilty of first degree.
Good.
And she was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
See, there you go. Because that... You're not going to convince me that wasn't premeditated, given the fact that she lured her back there.
I know.
That was planned.
She, after her trial, she wanted to address Jaina's family. Oh. She wanted to say something.
Oh, I'll bet.
She said, "For the Murray family, what do I say when your daughter's gone and I'm the one convicted of her murder? I know what I say today won't take the pain away over Jaina's loss. I hope for you, Murray family, someday you'll be able to find forgiveness in your heart. I am sorry." But then went on to say that she too was a victim.
Typical sociopath. They're always the victim.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah. So the judge, I guess, was the one that decided her, you know, the jury sentence. Found her guilty, and so the judge sentenced her. And... The judge told her, "After every blow, you had a chance to think about what you were doing. You were devious, in control, totally on top of the situation. While you lie to try to get out of what you have done, you are one hell of a liar, ma'am."
Mm-hmm.
So she sits in prison still.
Whew.
So life without parole.
I mean, you might as well say why you did it at this point.
I know.
I hate that.
I know.
It's just like, so did you know that Robert Durst finally died?
No.
Yes.
Did he really?
He died in January.
No, I had no idea.
I had no idea either. We were watching TV, I don't know if it was last weekend or the weekend before, and just something made me think, I wonder if he's still alive, because, you know, he was super...
I know, he'd been really sick.
Really
stuff.
Sick. He had a lot of shit in. He had cancer and COVID, and I was like, surely to God he ain't still alive. So I looked him up, and he died back in January. So, we'll never know.
Never know about him either.
About what happened to his wife, mm-hmm. where her body is. We'll never find out what happened with his best friend.
I think his name friend.
Was Susan.
Yep, Susan.
I mean, we already know what happened with the guy in Texas for the most part, but...
Jeez.
Yeah, so now we'll never know.
Well,
he barely spent any time... He got to be free for the majority of his life.
At least he's fucking dead, I guess.
I guess.
But God. I would like to know... But I guess we never will, so. So you got any ideas for our next one yet?
God, there's so many. There's so many. It's just so hard to choose.
I know.
I'm like, because I watch, I think it's Peacock streaming service. And they've got so many true crime shows on there,
really?
Too. Yeah, and they've
Peacock,
got.
Peacock, so.
Oh, they have so many. I've been watching, like. Homicide for the Holidays.
Ooh.
Buried in the Backyard.
Oh.
Like, there's so many good shows with all these different stories. And I'm like, oh my God, I'd really like to cover that. I'd really like to cover that.
You just got to make a list, I guess.
Prioritize
and see what one sounds the best. Well, thanks for listening, y'all. We're going to try to do better with releasing our podcast for sure. So.
Yes. We said that last time.
I know we did, but we mean it, damn it. Okay, well, you know, you can always hit us up on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook if you have any ideas for shows you want to hear. So,
for sure.
Leave us reviews, and we'll talk to y'all soon, I guess.
Yeah. Bye, guys.